Leith Festival Podcast Network, hosting a range of shows from food and drink, healthy living, music, and so much more. Supported by the Cora Foundation Enabling Neighbourhoods and Communities Grant, the Cora Foundation helps improve the lives of individuals and communities experiencing disadvantage all across Scotland and in developing countries.
Hi everyone, this is Erin from the Erin Eats Everything podcast, and today I am with co-owner of East Coast Cured, Susie Anderson.
Hello.
Hey, thanks so much for joining me today. We're doing it over Zoom, the new way forward, the new technology. But I'm a massive fan of East Coast Cured, and I have been in various times picking up meat. This is kind of my ultimate snacking, meat and cheese boards where I can pick and graze. I'm just so curious, like, how did you end up doing this charcuterie business? Like, what's the kind of history with you guys?
Very good question. Key is a degree in textile design, which is my background. But I'll start from the beginning of the story. So basically, Stephen and I, my husband, who I run the business with, we both love charcuterie. We love cured meat. We love snacky meals of meat and cheese and things like that. And yeah, you know, for years and years, before traveling was paused, you know, we loved exploring Europe and munching our way through local cured meat from farmers markets and all that kind of stuff. Stephen used to live in Toulouse as well, in the south of France, so got to know really nice cured meats and things. So it's something we've enjoyed as a product forever. And we've also had many conversations around the fact that it's not obviously something that is a traditional industry within Scotland. And we rear some of the best meat in the world. So why aren't we curing it? Why aren't we curing more of it, kind of thing? So this is something that has been discussed and things for years. At the same time, Stephen likes a project, likes a hobby. So his background is slightly more relevant to what we do. So he is a craft brewer and distiller by trade. He's worked in drink production for about 10 years. So nice. Initially, he was just a lover of craft beer and started brewing at home. He left a job in sales that he really didn't like and started volunteering initially at Stuart Brewing, so like washing casks in the middle of the night, glamorous things like that. He really enjoyed working there, and he got a job as a brewing assistant, I guess, and then sort of worked his way up to brewing supervisor. At the same time, he was doing a Open Uni engineering course as well.
Wow.
And then after, I think it was like 4 or 5 years at Stuart's and really enjoying the sort of aspects of craft production and stuff, he got a job over at North British Distillery in Gorgie, who they're owned by Diageo and Edrington, I think, and they put out basically millions of litres of what is effectively pure alcohol, and it's used in blends and things, right. Johnny Walker, etc., etc. So he's sort of seen the production side of things from the craft side, and then the other side of the spectrum, the massive, massive, massive side. He really enjoyed working at North British. Everything that he learned there kind of went into what we have currently done with East Coast Cured, but he missed the sort of hands-on nature of craft production, I suppose. So, you know, we're still going on holiday. We're still having conversations about, cured meat and things like that. And I think it was like 2014 or something, just after our youngest was born. Stephen was like, I'm gonna teach myself how to make charcuterie in the same way I taught myself how to brew. And he built an environmentally controlled curing room in the eaves of our attic.
Oh my gosh.
So we live in the colonies just around the corner from the shop, not far away at all. So we live, work and school our children in this very small triangle of existence, just off Leith Links. So yeah, he built curing rooms in the sort of crawl space of our attic that was all, you know, food grade and all that kind of stuff, lined the walls, set up various bits of equipment to monitor humidity, airflow, temperature, all that kind of stuff. And basically we started testing recipes. We contacted Puddle Dub, who are based just outside Coddy and have been rearing excellent pork for a long time, in the very early stages before, you know, before we'd thought about making it a commercial thing. And they were very supportive. So we bought cuts and things from them. We did all the butchery and whatnot in our kitchen and, yeah, and played around with recipes and things like that. And then that was for a good couple of years. We were really enjoying what we were eating, what we were creating, and we enjoyed sharing it with friends, and we got really, really, really good feedback. So at that point, we were like, ooh, maybe we could make this commercial. We'd often talked about like having a family business and stuff as well. We chatted about brewing, but the kids were too small, lack of funds, all that kind of stuff. Yeah. So we decided that we would give it a go, basically. So Stephen's still working full time at North British. While he was kind of learning the production side of things, I mentioned at the beginning that my background is in textile design, yes, which has zero to do with what we do other than, you know, the design side of stuff. So I had been working for a charity, a gallery in town that supported artists with disabilities and mental health conditions and ran traineeships for people on the autistic spectrum. So I was doing that for about 8 years. So I suppose the sort of business knowledge and all that kind of stuff comes from me. But yeah, the charity decided to close their social enterprises. I was made redundant. And this was all at the same time as we were kind of testing recipes in the attic and stuff. So the kids were, I think, maybe like 1 and 4 when we decided to make a go of it. And we started looking for commercial premises, basically. So we envisaged that we would perhaps be on an industrial estate somewhere, but a neighbor, Nadia, who now works with us actually, told us about the shop round the corner from our house. That is, you've been in the shop,
yeah,
teeny tiny wee shop upstairs with massive basement, so perhaps it would be suitable to cure meat in it. So Stephen and I had saved a fair bit of money when we were both working and things, with a view to do something, you know, like start a business. And so we bought the shop and started using it for our production, basically. We spent, I say we, it's a royal we. I was, you know, like keeping children alive and stuff like that while Stephen was working full time and basically refitting the shop. So we focused on getting the production side of things set up downstairs, and then the shop came a wee bit later, basically.
I ask, when you were looking for it, so this, it was this kind of one of those incidences where it pretty much fell in your lap kind of thing?
Yeah, basically, because we'd had a wee look at commercials, but it had to work from a logistical point of view, a family point of view, a fitting it into Stephen working full time. We didn't want him to, well, he didn't want to be away from his young family in, I don't know, an industrial estate somewhere outside Edinburgh for hours and days at a time when he was also working full time too. So yeah, it was really handy. And our commute to work is about 20 seconds, which is...
It's not many people that can say that unless they're working from home, but actually the commute being 20 seconds.
Exactly, which is great. I mean, on most levels, it's fantastic that it's just around the corner. On some levels, you know, it's quite difficult to ever escape work, but I think that might have discovered that might be part of just running a business anyway.
Yeah, well, when it's your baby like that, it is all consuming. And you mean, you know that if you were to have a day off, which everybody deserves, you then think all this stuff that I've got to do is going to pile up, you know. You want to make sure it's successful and it's running well, so I can imagine that it feels all consuming.
it is, but we have a lot of support these days, so that's good. But at the beginning, it was just, yeah, it was just Stephen and I, and we had minimal funds as well. We had, you know, we'd saved money, but our funds were minimal. So we had to spend as little as possible when it came to, you know, the refit and startup and things mm-hmm. like that as well. So everything was, yeah, everything happened in stages, I guess. So it was, I think it was May 2016, we got the keys for WrestleRig Road.
Yeah.
And yeah, at that point, Stephen was still working full time. And then it was the January of 2017 that we started production. And then we launched our products at, do you remember the Biscuit Factory market?
Oh gosh, yeah, I do. I forgot about that market, yeah.
Edinburgh Food Social it was, wasn't
yes,
it?
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, because did you go to that? I feel, because I've met you, haven't I, prior to this conversation.
Yeah, we have foodies.
Yes, yes, that's right, of course. Sorry, my sort of pre-COVID, anything that happened before COVID is like really hazy. But when you got in touch, I was like, I totally know you, but I can't remember why, but that's why.
Now, they all merge into one a little bit. Markets, events, it kind of feels like they all blur into one a little bit because there's so many. But yeah, no, I do remember. That's such a shame that that stopped, actually, that Biscuit Factory.
I know. It was a great market. And yeah, well, we will always remember it fondly because it was where we launched our salamis and things too. So yeah, that I think that was like 25th of March 2017. And we did, because it was, I think they were monthly, weren't they? I think they were monthly, the market.
Yeah, I think they were, yeah.
So we did like Saturday, Sunday. So yeah, when we launched, Stephen's still working full time. We kind of envisaged that being the case for a couple of years and maybe even getting, he could train somebody to do the production. But basically very quickly, it was apparent that we were going to need to make more meat, basically. We were processing just half a pig a week when we started, and we were kind of fitting it into Stephen's shift pattern, which was like 4 days on, 4 days off, rotating days on tonight. So that was interesting. So we just kind of fit that in when we could. But then, yeah, we had lots of interest. We didn't know, right, whether, yeah, there was no strategy at the beginning. It was like, we'll give markets a go. We'll maybe see if we can develop a wee shop. And we'll see if like some bars and restaurants and things are interested. But we didn't have a network of people. We've had to kind of create that ourselves because neither of us, Stephen's worked in the production side of food and drink, but we didn't have a sort of network and, you know, routes to sell things. So
yeah,
we've
exactly,
had to kind
yeah.
of create that. But within the first sort of month or two, we were having conversations with Smith and Gertrude, the Bon Vivant Group, Rutland. Martin Wishart emailed out of the blue to ask if he could come and sample our wares. And then we were on the honours menu and things as well. So it was all,
wow.
Yeah, it was all very, very exciting. I think part of me, you know, when Stephen suggested or when we talked about starting the business, you know, bear in mind that I probably had like total baby brain still at that stage. And was like, yeah, we'll totally start a charcuterie business. Great idea. And probably thought we'd give it a go. And then, it might not amount to anything. And then we'd go back to our day jobs kind of thing. But that's not what happened.
No, but this is great, though, because you do hear a lot of people that test things and unfortunately they don't always take off, you know, it's so good to see something doing so well. And I was going to pick up on something you said at the beginning, you know, how you said that we rear some of the best meat and nobody's doing the charcuterie. Like, it then feels, my obvious like thing that was going off in my head was, why was nobody doing it? And I'm so glad somebody is, but why is there a reason, a barrier to market? What's the, or is it just nobody's picked up on it?
I guess so. There were we weren't the first. I should add that there were a couple. There's still only a handful of people doing it in Scotland. I don't know. This is something Stephen and I talk about all the time. Obviously, historically, we would have cured meat. We would have. You know, maybe a family might have had a pig. We would have salted it and hung it over the winter, and it would have. You know, it would have fed your family kind of thing, but that would have been whole muscles and whole parts of animals. It wouldn't necessarily have been salami. Sausage has been more of our thing, and I can't find any information, historical or otherwise, to show that salami has been something that we have created in Scotland or the UK, but certainly salting big cuts of meat has been. I don't know. Maybe, again, traditionally, you wouldn't have been able to create your own environment to cure meat as well. So it's super humid in the UK. That would have been a factor as well. Humidity that's too high is, you know, is a nightmare for curing meat. So that's possibly why.
It just feels really strange, doesn't it? You know. And the other thing I was going to ask as well is my favorite bit, the actual meats themselves and how you went about doing it. Now, I've got a few favorites.
Go for it. What are your favorites?
So I love the porcini and truffle. Mm-hmm. I love the fennel, but my biggest favorite, and it's not like a regular one. I always look out for it when it comes in, is the duck prosciutto.
Oh yeah.
That is my number one. That is the pièce de résistance for me. That is the one.
Phenomenal. It's a really, really, really tasty one. I think we were able to be, it's probably the same for everybody in sort of food and drink production. You can often be more experimental at the beginning, but then you've got to kind of meet demand from your customers for your core products. So it leaves less time for development. But actually, in the last 6 months, we've brought back a few recipes that we were doing at the beginning, like I made Stephen make duck prosciutto at Christmas time and everybody loves it. It's an expensive product, but so, so, so tasty.
That's how I got into you guys. Like that's how, yeah, it was the duck prosciutto because I came across you, I think from market, and then I was like, right, I'm going to have a look. And I was like, duck prosciutto? I was like, I've never heard it. I was like, but I have to try it. And this is basically where I started with you guys. And then I was like, well, I'll take this and a couple of other things. Then I'll go back and I'm like, oh, I'll try that one and I'll try this one.
Amazing. Yeah, no, the duck prosciutto, a lot of delighted customers at Christmas time when that came back, as well as we've started making, I don't know if you've tried it, but our merguez style salami again as well, which is and North African spices. So we've got some of that. Ooh. I don't know if it's gone online, but there's still some at the Leith shop. Nice. What else? We've been experimenting with various specials. We've just done a Romanian style salami, Yarna Salam, if my pronunciation is correct. Serena, our curing room manager, is Romanian. So we thought it was about time we gave that a go. I think also, like in the UK, certainly, we're more used to like the French and Spanish and Italian style cured meats. But actually, the whole of Europe seems to cure meat and have their own sort of salamis and things like that. So it's been nice looking at, like we did a Polish style one last year, the Romanian one. I often speak to various people from all over Europe, be it Scandinavia or parts of Eastern Europe at markets and things that tell me about their sort of native salamis and things too. So there's a whole lot of things to explore.
A whole plethora to go through.
Exactly.
And I was going to ask, so out of the meats, what is the one that everybody seems to gravitate towards? What's the most popular? The big question, what is the one?
It's a tricky one. People often ask, so newcomers at markets will say, what's your best seller? And it's like, it's so different sort of person to person and market to market. But initially, porcini and truffle, because, you know, it was brand spanking new. Nobody had tried anything like it. That was one of the ones we developed at home, actually. And we were like, ooh, it's really expensive. It uses expensive ingredients. Is this going to sell? And it sold out like that at the first market at the Biscuit Factory.
Because it's brilliant. That's why. It tastes great.
Thank you. It used to be my favorite, and then I ate way too much of it, and then I didn't eat it for like 2 years, and now I'm firmly back into porcini and truffle, actually.
Yeah, fair.
Porcini is definitely a big seller. The fennel salami as well, I think, because it's just such a classic, isn't it? You know, the Italians make finocchiona, which is fennel salami. We ate a lot of it when we were in Tuscany when our eldest was 6 months old, I think. And just pork and fennel, it's a winning combo, isn't it?
Yeah.
So of the classics, that one, our saucisson is our most simple recipe, just with white pepper and garlic. But yeah, people love it. We have a lot of French customers at the shop that come specifically for it. A lot of them are like, "Ooh, this is even better than what we get at home."
That is a massive compliment, isn't
it's
it?
A huge compliment. It is a massive, massive compliment. Our Andouille as well. So when we first started, I'd never heard of Andouille, and I think one of our trade customers asked us to make it. I can't remember who that was, but they did, and we were like, "Okay, awesome, we'll give it a go." And like the punters, our customers hadn't ever heard of it. And then I think it was popularized by celebrity chefs and articles and magazines and stuff. And now it just flies out the door.
That's always the way. Like, that's the thing. If there's something new and trendy, wait till Great British Menu or MasterChef comes on and it gets mentioned all the time. It's a bit like, I didn't know what sea buckthorn was. And then there was a running trend that everybody was using sea buckthorn. And I was like, okay, if that's obviously the new one of this year. So
who would have thought it, eh? And who would have thunk it? It's interesting. And we're seeing the same with guanciale at the moment as well. Because again, like, you know,
what's guanciale? What's that?
Guanciale is the jowl of the pig. And it's cured. So it's similar in fat content to the belly. But it's what Italians traditionally use in carbonaras and other tasty dishes and things. So we cure it really simply, but it's phenomenal. You need to come and get some if you haven't tried it.
Yeah, I definitely haven't tried that one. That sounds lovely.
You need to buy some and it will revolutionize your carbonara and then you will be addicted.
Oh, nice. Well, I'm happy to be converted because I love the pork belly as well, like the cured pork belly and stuff like that. Yeah. I'm a sucker for that as well. And I love, like, I'm similar to you. I can't think of anything better than when I go away. Yeah, it's nice to have nice big meals, but I can't think of anything better than having a grazing board with a nice glass of red and just chilling out and just picking away at things. And I remember one of the favorite places that I went to was the Azores. And they had a really lovely kind of charcuterie wine bar that we went back to twice. Mm-hmm. And they sold the wine. So I think we bought a bottle to take back. So it was really nice wine. Gorgeous. And they had a great selection of meats and stuff that I hadn't heard of. And I'm like, what is this? And he was like, oh, try this. This will be good with this. And it was amazing. I absolutely loved it.
That's our favorite thing to do on holiday as well. I feel that we probably eat less charcuterie now. It's like, because it just feels like work. Do you know what I mean? It's like, you're on holiday. And, you know, you order somebody else's charcuterie and you're always going to be like, ooh, comparing, contrasting ideas and things. You take your own charcuterie on holiday and it's like, oh, it's a wee bit like work. But no, saying that over. So we had a week off in Easter and we didn't go away, but we did various day trips and like overnights near Edinburgh. So took meat to this amazing place called the bus stop in East Lothian that is like glamping on vintage buses that have hot tubs attached to them. You should
go. Oh my God.
Really cool. So yeah, being able to hang out with it was me and a mate and our combined four children. So, you know, sitting in the hot tub, having a glass of wine and then having a big fat board of cheese and meat afterwards was a wonderful, wonderful thing. Or at the beach, or, you know, for like picnics on walks, and it's just so versatile.
I know, but it's just because it's easy. That's the thing. Like, it's just easy. That's and there's always going to be something for somebody in there as well, whether
unless
they're more expensive
or vegan.
Yeah, I know. Those people, I'm not hanging out with them. No, I'm joking. I am.
But we cater for everybody at our Leith shop, though. We do have one or two things that are, we've got lots of things that are veggie friendly, one or two things that are vegan friendly as well.
And you guys are stocking other people in there as well, because I've noticed some of the other brands in there that you've, and had, was that what you initially did when you first opened up, or has that kind of came over time?
It's kind of evolved. So when we first opened, as I say, we focused on the production space, saved some money, managed to get the shop done up and stuff. And when we first opened the doors of the shop to the public, we were doing, I think, monthly pop-ups, so like our own kind of mini markets in that space. And then we were open, I think it was like Friday afternoon, Saturday morning, added we added Edinburgh Fermentarium ferments because I knew Ruth. I met her at our food hygiene training before we kind of launched the business. We added Strathairn cheese because we overlapped with those guys at various markets. And again, we started the business at similar times. And then it kind of evolved from there. So we started with the shop was open longer. I think it was Wednesday to Saturday, pre-COVID possibly. And added other bits and bobs. And it was always with a view that it would be things that would complement our meats. So be that bread from Company Bakery or chutneys from Spice Witch, olives from Silver and Green. And then when COVID hit and it became apparent that a lot of people were nervous about going to larger shops and wanted to stay a little bit closer to home, we added things like milk and flour. Remember, flour was impossible to get for a while as well. So we got gorgeous flour from Mungo's Wells, Mosgiel milk, Corrie Main's eggs, all just good quality Scottish produce, basically. Yeah.
And what is the plans for the future? What is on the cards for East Coast Cured?
Well, pre-COVID, we were basically, it all been about growing production to meet demand. And our very, what felt like a really huge production space when we first started is now bursting at the seams. So at the beginning of 2020, before everything went wrong in the world, we were like, right, we want to increase production. We will increase our direct sales to wholesale and all that kind of stuff. And then obviously COVID hit. We lost about 70% of our business overnight with hospitality closing. And we just had to kind of change things up a bit, I guess. Mm-hmm. So we ended up very quickly, with most of our sales coming via our Leith shop and online. We'd taken a couple of weeks off production just to sort of see the lay of the land and things too. And then very quickly it was like, all right, we're going to have to increase production anyway to meet retail demand. So the focus over the last 2 years has very much been the, you know, direct to consumer stuff, the retail side of things. But happily, in the last, you know, few months or so, restrictions on our restaurant customers have lifted finally, and we're able to get back into supplying them again, basically, and tackling our waiting list of customers. So currently at the moment we're all about new premises. Now I can't give you too much information at the moment, but we may have found a new premises that we have to like get planning permission and stuff on, and it may be not very far away from the shop, which is also quite exciting. So It would allow us to move production, because although our production setup is amazing, Stephen basically built it all himself. You know, we couldn't afford like 20 grand pieces of equipment from the continent.
Yeah, of course. That. So
if we couldn't afford it, we designed and built it ourselves in a sort of mad scientist kind of a way. So it works for what we're doing, but we want something that's more been, you know, designed to spec. Anyway, yeah, we may have found somewhere. We may be in the process of applying for planning permission. And that's quite exciting.
That is so exciting.
So oh my super gosh. Busy with that at the moment, because obviously we need to make sure everything else is running and happening anyway. And then there's these plans for expansion. So fingers crossed, all will go according to plan, and I'll be able to give you even more exciting news in the next few weeks and months.
Oh my gosh, that's brilliant. Oh, I'm so excited. And I literally was hoping you were going to tell me something like this, like either like an additional shop or bigger premises, something like that. So I'm so glad to hear that is on the cards.
We would love a shot and another shot, because we love our Leith shop, and that will always exist. It's, you know, it's our home. It's home of the brand. But we would like some sort of additional retail space closer to town. I think be that in a wee shack in town, be that, ooh, maybe as part of the new Jenner's development. This is what I'm fancying, because I used to work in Jenner's. That's where my retail career started when I was a kid. So I was looking at the plans actually this morning, was like, ooh, I should contact them. That would be a nice story, wouldn't it? Going full circle. But the focus, the main focus at the moment is we need bigger, more efficient premises to be able to produce more, meet demand, and then the rest will follow.
Oh, God. Well, that's brilliant. And I'm so excited. And I want to say thank you so much for your time today. It's been so nice chatting with you. And
absolute pleasure.
And I'm literally going to get in the car and I'm going to go up and get some of these meats that you told me about, because I'm salivating thinking about it.
Well, Nadia will be ready for you. She is, yeah, she is open. All the weekend treats are out, pastries, etc. And she's got, yeah, there's loads and loads and loads of specials. So you should swing by and have a try.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, thank you so much. And guys, if you haven't been to East Coast Cured, go and check it out. And if you see the duck prosciutto, I'm telling you, you have to get it. You will not be disappointed. You will not be disappointed.
Get Stephen back on production of that.
Speak to you guys soon.
Thanks, Erin. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Leith Festival Podcast Network. If you'd like to know more about Leith Festival, simply visit leithfestival.com. You can also hit the support button to make a donation or find out about volunteering opportunities and other ways that you can help us to help the community.